From KMUW Wichita,
from Toronto, Ontario,
and from Armilla, Spain,
this is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk cranberry morphemes. Nope, I don't know what they are either. But we're going to find out. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. Kathy Petras at your home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras at your home in Toronto. I'm going to rush through the hellos today because I want to mention something to our listeners. So, hi, guys.
Hi, Fletcher.
Oh, hi. Oh, you're here.
Well, we love hearing from you, and we love answering your questions. And one thing we would also love doing is hearing your voices. And so we wanted to mention that you have that option. You can always either record a voice memo on your phone and email that to us, or also you can download the KMUW app. There's a little option on the menu that says talk to us. Just click that. You can hit the record button. Once you're finished, it sends it straight to me, and so we can hear you that way as well. And just know that if you do record your voice and send it to us, there's a chance that it'll end up on the show. So if you want to keep emailing us, that's obviously fine too. So today, we are going to talk about cranberry morphemes. And I haven't decided if the joke is that's my two-year-old's favorite breakfast, or that's a children's movie made by David Cronenberg.
I'm not 100%
sure.
I like that one.
Sure.
Okay, we'll go with that one. So that's the joke. There we go. All right. Hi, guys. What the heck are cranberry morphemes, and why are we talking about them?
Well, first of all, Fletcher, it came from a question from Emily in Cape Cod, which is actually a very good question. A good place to ask that question, because cranberries are found up in New England.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, she asks, what is the cran in cranberry? Which is a good question.
Yeah, right?
Got any ideas, Fletcher?
What is the cran in cranberry? I have only ever heard cranberry. I mean, you hear cran.
Ah, that's very important.
Yeah, you hear like cran raisin and cran apple, but that's just a combination of cranberries and whatever the thing is. I've never heard of a cran anything else.
Well, in a way you may have, because apparently the idea of a cranberry morpheme, first of all, is that the word itself, that term cran, has no English equivalent alone. We don't know what a cran is. You said it perfectly.
Oh.
So that's what a cranberry morpheme in effect is. And a morpheme, incidentally, do you know what a morpheme is?
I'm going to guess it's like part of a word.
Yeah, the smallest unit of meaning in a language. It could be like a un, anti, etc. But like in blueberry, for example, like the morphemes are blue and berry, and we know what blue means, at least I think so. But we don't know what cran means, and that's what a cranberry morpheme is. It's when the element, the morpheme, is unknown outside of that one word.
It's also called a bound morpheme, because it's stuck with berry. There's no, you don't have crayons running around. You just have the cranberry.
Oh.
But in the case, I mean, actually, and this is where Ross and I have discussed this contentiously, I might add. Not with each other,
I've never
other,
seen two people get
thing.
More angry about cranberries than Kathy.
Because the cran isn't anything in English. So no one that speaks English would recognize the cran.
Right.
However, it does come from the German meaning crane. So technically, this is where Ross and I always get like a little irritated. So technically, the cran does mean something. It just doesn't mean something in English.
Uh-huh.
And even there, though, I'm going to go one further. There is some indication that in early English, they were called craneberries as well. It's a little bit of different species, the one here and the one in Europe. But they were actually maybe even called crane, and then the E dropped off and it became, you know, a short A, cranberry. So even there, it doesn't seem that amazing of an idea. However,
but we have to drop that.
Way to burst our bubble, Ross.
Let's start that way. No, it can only get better.
So basically, as Ross was saying, like you've got morphemes that cranberry morphemes we're calling them, but they're also called bound morphemes. They do not stand alone in English.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to ask you, can you figure out or guess which has a cranberry morpheme in it and which has a legitimate, if not often used, word?
Before we go in there, can I interrupt something?
You may.
Last night I was talking to my wife, who's a culinary historian, and she said, it was really interesting, they used to be called cranberries. And the first cookbook in America by a woman, Amelia Simmons, has all these recipes for cranberry sauce.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? I don't know.
Cranberries. Cranberry.
I like cranberry. Now it's considered a variant, a dialectical variant.
I'm trying to decide which one's easier to say. Cranberry.
Cranberry.
Cranberry. Cran's yeah. easier.
Cran I think cranberry is easier.
Cranberry.
Yeah.
Cranberry. Cranberry. Cranberry? Yeah. No. Kinda... You run into the.
Cranberry. Cranberry. I think I say cranberry. It's easier to me.
It's well, anyway. Cranberry. I have no brother. Anyway, let's move on, Ross.
Okay. So we're going to try to figure out, Fletcher, what is a cranberry morpheme and which is a legit, if not often used, word.
Okay.
And we're going to start with one word, lukewarm.
I feel lukewarm about the pronunciation of cranberry.
I know that warm is a legit word, so that's not the cranberry morpheme in that word. But luke. Now, I can't think really of any other circumstances where I hear luke, but I think it really is a legit word somehow, somewhere back there.
Okay, we started with a problematic one. Most, because we like to keep everybody on their toes. Most people do say, yes, indeed, the luke, the morpheme luke in lukewarm is indeed a cranberry morpheme. Our problem, this is where Ross and I kept going, well, is it comes from the Middle English luke, L-U-K, meaning tepid. And they're not quite sure where it came from. It might be from Old English. It might have been from Proto-Germanic, from Middle Dutch. But it is no longer used.
Mm-hmm.
So the luke is technically a bound morpheme. You do not find it other than the name of a person, except for in lukewarm. But see, now this is where Ross and I have an issue. To me and to Ross, I think I'm speaking for you, Ross, but I think you agree. Since it was a word...
It doesn't seem that interesting that way. Although I do like two things. So, I mean, we're both like, technically, yes. Although I do like two other words with Luke, which I really like. Luke hot and Luke hearted. Both are from the late 1400s.
Ooh, I like Isn't Luke hearted. Cool? Luke hearted is good.
I know. Yeah. I really like that.
I think that we should bring that back because it's a really good one for someone who's tepid about someone else. It's like, yeah I like him, but I'm kind of lukehearted.
Yeah.
Yeah, which comes to the cranberry morpheme sort of thing. We're lukehearted about it.
Or cranberry, as some of us might want to say. The next word, inept.
Inept. Ept. I always thought this was sort of like, this used to be a different word. Maybe because I know, like, the word apt. But
yeah, you got it.
Oh, there we are.
Right there, you got it. Okay, yeah, it comes from apt, and it's a sound change. In Latin, it's from ineptus, which is unsuitable, improper, which is in plus aptus. Mm-hmm. And again, this goes back to the whole thing, because ept and apt are so similar. It didn't strike Kathy and me as really... a cranberry morpheme, even though it's always listed.
Well, but now I'm actually, the more we're talking about this, Ross, the more I'm changing my mind completely. I think it's totally cran. The more I'm thinking, because you know, no one says ept. I don't ever go like, gosh, Ross, you're really ept at computer stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
No, you would
anyway.
Never say that, Kathy.
But no, so I'm actually, I'm starting to grok this better. No, I'm all for this.
I think if the idea is that it's bound up with this other part of the word, and that's the only time we ever see it. It doesn't ultimately really matter where it came from, right? Where that morpheme came from.
No, it doesn't.
Hit the nail
You're
on
right,
the head.
Actually, Fletcher.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, because what matters is that it's bound to that other morpheme, and that's the only time we ever see it now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem that Kathy and I do have now is we're always doing etymology.
Yeah.
So a lot of the...
Right, yeah.
So the backwards words are kind of alive to us.
Right,
to some degree,
exactly. Which is cool.
We're also pains. We also tend to be skeptical. Go, really? I don't know.
That's also part of your charm, I think.
Okay, our next word, Fletcher, is innocent.
Innocent. Fascinating. Which part of the word is which morpheme? Innocent? How should this word be split?
Well, it should actually be split with in.
Mm-hmm. I-N?
And then, yes. And then because of how it worked, you double the N in this case, but nocent.
Nocent. It is nocent. Okay.
So you're not, N is not.
Not nocent.
You're not nocent.
You keep giving me ones that are technically cranberry morphemes. I feel like one of these shouldn't be at all. So I guess I'm going to say this one isn't, but I don't know what nocent means or where it comes from. Seems Latin or something.
You good guess again. you're right. It does come from the Latin nocere, to harm. And so it means not harmed, not harming, not harmed, free from guilt or a specific crime.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The next word is unkempt.
Oh, right.
Ross looks rather unkempt. You don't, Ross. You look very nice.
Thank you.
Unkempt. Right. So, okay. So we're talking about the word kempt. Do we ever see that anywhere else? I mean, I know it used to be a word. I think we've talked about it before. I mean, kempt used to mean tidy, right?
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Is that just an uncommonly used word now, or is it just actually a bound morpheme?
No.
It's not.
You're right. It's really not a cranberry morpheme, because kempt was an English word that was used. It's just that it's now a fossil word. This is getting complicated.
I mean, it's still a word. Like you could still use it. Like it's not a completely gone word. It exists and we know what it means.
Can right. I just give you a couple? I'll give you a couple sentences. Good housekeeping, May 9, 2017. A well-kempt garden is the toad's worst enemy.
That's a great sentence.
I love that. Yeah, I couldn't help it. I just love that quote. But and then there was another one in National Geographic, a well-kempt courtyard for visitors.
Okay, yeah.
So you can use it still, so therefore it really technically isn't. Although this is, Kathy just said something about complicated. I kind of half wonder if kempt, the examples I just gave are all from the 2010s and beyond. And I'm sort of wondering if kempt came back in a way as sort of like a clever, because I don't recall kempt from being a kid. Do you, Kathy?
No.
Everybody started wondering whether something could be kempt because they'd all heard unkempt. And so they started using it again to be a little bit clever. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's sort of what I think. I'm wondering.
Okay, the next word, which you would not find in a well-kempt garden, is cobweb.
Oh, okay. Cobweb. Those three letters, cob, I definitely see in other places, like a corn cob, right? But I don't know what
this is a different kind of. Yeah, this is a different kind of cob.
Cobweb, cob. No, I guess this is probably a bound morpheme. This is a cranberry morpheme.
This one, Kathy instantly knew. I was really impressed with Kathy.
Well, okay, thank you, Ross. It's because of Tolkien. Tolkien. It is. You're right. It's considered a cranberry morpheme because the cob in cobweb comes from the obsolete word. Cope. I can't do it in Old English. I don't know why I sound like a bad Brit. Cope, a spider. And then it became cob. But I immediately knew it, and as I told Ross, because in The Hobbit, especially, they started talking about the cobs when Bilbo was in, like, with all the barrels and stuff.
Mirkwood.
Yeah. And that really bothered me. So then I didn't consider this personally a cranberry morpheme because I knew about, like, and then he talked about the cobs in Shelob. They talk about the cob. She's a cob.
Mm-hmm. I guess I always thought cobwebs were not spider webs. They were sort of the dust webs that develop in corners.
That's what I know them as, too. I agree with you.
Yeah. Interesting.
But I think those are actually, but I mean, not to be an arachnologist or a student, I think that those cobwebs actually are formed from old webs. I don't know, but I'm going to look that up right now. I'm really curious.
Okay, cobweb is okay. Immediately, what first came up was spider's web, especially when old and dusty.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So it's when the dust gets all over the spider web.
Really? Now I'm kind of grossed out.
Yeah, technically. Here from Graduate Pest Solutions. A cobweb is an abandoned spider web.
Wow.
Okay, now I want to know where they went. Am I right?
That's a good question.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
But I also want to add that cob, as a standalone for spider, was an old world word nearly dead when J.R. Tolkien used it in The Hobbit.
Oh, really?
So. Yeah, so he kind of brought back the car. Huh.
But nearly dead, not dead. That's interesting, too.
Good point.
Well, I could say I resent these problems. Okay. That's a, talking about bad segues. That's why.
I kind of feel sorry for you right now.
Okay, resent, Fletcher.
Resent. This is fun because you guys are making me think about words I've never really thought about, like the pieces of before. That's really neat. Zent. I don't think it is. I don't think it's a cranberry morpheme.
Well, think again.
Okay, you have two choices here.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, it is. It comes from the zent part comes from actually from the French sentir, to feel, and that which in turn came backwards from the Latin sentire, to feel, to think.
Okay, I guess this is why I thought it wasn't, because I thought of a word like sentient. And I figured that S-E-N-T was basically meaning the same thing. Like,
but
feel,
it's not a standalone word. That's the key.
Oh, okay. That makes a little more sense to me then.
Yeah, it doesn't exist, the resent, that zent part.
It only exists when it's bound to something.
Correct.
Okay, I was thinking it had to be bound to, like, only the other morpheme in that word, but it can be bound.
Well, it's a sloppy definition.
Yeah, of course.
Some people say it's only one word. Other people say, well, it can be bound to others. And that's why the concept gets sort of, it's a great concept to look at words. It's a great excuse to look at words. Let's leave it at that.
It is. And it's a fun name. So let's keep doing it.
But actually, Fletcher, I'm quite impressed with sentient though, because that also comes from the Latin to feel, to think. So very good.
Yeah, thanks.
And now we're going to go to what Kathy accused me of being of earlier, disheveled.
I won't say why.
I don't think I'm disheveled, but whatever.
Not now.
Okay, disheveled.
Well, so is the word sheveled or is it heveled? Is it disheveled or are we just sort of mushing dis and disheveled together?
Well, I'm going to give you a quick clue.
Okay.
In France, if I went to a barbershop and I said, I have a problem, I'd like to have my cut.
Okay, and I can never remember which one's horse and which one's hair, but cheveux, is it cheveux?
It comes from the old French.
Okay.
And it's chevel, hair.
Does chevalier come from that as well or no?
Chevalier would be cheval
because that's horse. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in French now hair is cheveux. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. I can never remember cheveux, cheval.
Because I would get a horse and hair, which is a real disaster for us, Fletcher, if we go to France.
You know? I need my horse cut, please. Okay. So your hair is all messed up. Your hair is unkempt. Mm-hmm. Cheval. Well, then I guess in English, at least, that must be a cranberry morpheme, right?
Yes.
Okay, now, we should have said, I'm sorry, that there are also cranberry words, which we're going to pepper through here, and we just hit the first one. Cranberry words are words that occur in only one phrase, like intense in the phrase all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. You don't usually have intense appear. Well, couldn't you say they have many intents? No, you would not.
Well,
we've got
bated breath.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Precisely. So this word, is this a cranberry word or not? Once over.
Give it a once over? Like give it a once over? Wait, is that what people say?
Yeah.
The argument here is that the once in once over, as in to make a quick inspection, is in effect a cranberry word. This is from a linguistics book 15 years ago. Just to show you some of the problems. Mm-hmm. The word once over clearly makes a semantic contribution to the expressions in which it occurs. Its meaning presumably is quick inspection. To this extent, give someone something the once over is interpreted in accordance with the dictionary meaning of once over. On the other hand, once over is not freely available to occupy the end slot of a noun phrase. The word is virtually restricted to occurring in the cited phrase. Note, in this connection, the virtually obligatory use of the definite determiner. The phrase, along with its conventional meaning, has to be learned as such. Now, through this, we can deduce that Once over is indeed a cranberry word.
This is when I wish I'd become a plumber, let me tell you. I mean, really.
Yeah. Plumbing can be pretty complex, though. We had a plumber over the other day. So,
okay, never mind.
So it is, because what he's saying, I frankly, though, slightly disagree with this. Notice I said slightly because I'm hedging all bets here. But it seems to me the once over seems to me to be the clear use of once.
Uh-huh. That.
Well, no. Okay, I'm just going to do this off the top of my head. Okay, once over, if you want to do it literally, one time I looked at it. But that's really not what it means. A once over is a quick inspection. It's not one
time. You're
right,
actually.
Well, kind of. I mean, give it a once over. I mean, look over it one time and then we'll move on.
But you're weighing it, too. It's not just like I gave it a once over. It's just I saw this once. It's I'm giving it a once over. I'm looking at it and going, what do I think? Right?
Yeah, but just once. I mean, probably. Yeah, if it's quick, you're not probably going to do it twice.
I think
Kathy has argued quite well the virtually obligatory use of the definite determinant. So let's move on from there.
But no, I mean, it's a good illustration, of course, of how muddy all of this can be. I mean, we talk a lot about meanings and rules, and there's just a whole lot of murkiness surrounding most of language.
Completely. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Even when people make up words and definitions like this, like cranberry morphemes, you know, even when you make it up, everybody argues about it.
Do you want to do the berries quickly, Ross?
Yeah, let's do the berries too.
So we're going back to the whole notion of cranberries. So we're going to try a few other berries. Ready?
Ooh, yeah.
This is a toughie.
Blackberry.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was just because it was a very dark berry.
Wow, Fletcher, you got it.
Oh, okay. Perfect. I got that one. Yeah. So, blackberry is not a cranberry. All right. Let's move
good
on.
Okay. A strawberry.
A strawberry. It's not related to straw. I guess this must be a cranberry morpheme, yeah?
Well, this is where, Ross, I need your help. Because they say, no, the straw is not a cranberry morpheme, because even though the straw isn't have anything to do with straw, the straw is a word that's used
come on,
regularly.
That goes counter to the cobweb earlier, doesn't it?
Yeah,
yes.
All right, look.
Okay, we're going to go to the next one is raspberry. Raspberry?
Raspberry. I have always wondered about this. Going by just a second ago with the strawberry, raspberry would not be a cranberry morpheme because rasp can be used elsewhere.
Well, some people claim, this is where we can, again, we go back to the confusion aspect that makes me want to scream and end this show right now. Some people say that it comes from Rapsis or raspise, a sweet rose-colored wine. Ooh. So therefore, it does, but like I would never say, you know, a sweet rose-colored wine calling it raspise, so therefore it probably is. Or it comes from the medieval Latin raspa, meaning grape.
But we go back to then technically though, right? But the morpheme rasp is indeed a word, if not the one that's in there, the sound rasp is a word elsewhere.
Yes, but there's another statement. I'm going to throw this out too. There's a Germanic source that says rasp comes from the from meaning a rough berry from Old Germanic, which may be just a folk etymology.
Which is like a rasp, though. Like a rasp.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point, Kathy.
I like that one. I'm going to stick with that one. That's the one I believe. It's not a cranberry morpheme.
And I think we're going to leave everyone confused and go on to boysenberry.
Oh, wait. I just wanted to say, I was fascinated because you know how when the raspberry, when you make the raspberry, like you do it at ball games, you go...
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I was curious where it came from, and it comes from, they think, apparently, Cockney-style rhyming slang.
Yes.
It used to be raspberry tart, which rhymed with fart.
Yes.
Which I never knew. Yeah, because I was wondering why it's raspberry. Okay, Ross.
Okay, boysenberry.
You know, there's a lot of berries with totally made-up weird names, aren't there?
I know.
A boysen, well, I certainly have no... boysen sounds like somebody's name, so I think that's what it's named after.
You got it, Fletcher.
Nice.
Boysen is the name of a They said here the inventor of the berry, but I don't quite see how you invent a berry. I guess you could.
Oh, yeah, Randy's always doing that grafting and crossing.
Yeah,
and
I think you're right.
Randy's inventing berries?
My husband's like a big horticulturalist. He loves gardening, and he's always doing all this stuff that I don't know.
And you're right. California botanist Rudolph Boysen. Huh. Crossbred several species of berry. Kathy, you got it right.
Randy's from California, see?
You can have Randy berries next.
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah.
Is that a crayon, though? No, it wouldn't be, because I know him. And finally, we're going to do huckleberry. Yes, such a huckleberry, as Phil Rizzuto used to say when calling a Yankees game.
Huckleberry. Well, I don't know any other huckles. I suppose this also has to be a cranberry morpheme, but I am very curious where the huckle comes from.
You're right. It came, they think, from a Middle English whortleberry. Love etymology. Whortleberry, which came from horte. But yeah, there's no huckle. Although, it was also colloquially meant something of little consequence. Which is what they think were Huckleberry Finn. Huckleberry Finn was not as important or classy.
Although,
as Tom
actually,
Sawyer.
Though, I thought it was, I thought it was in the sense of he's just about right, as well. In a way, it was because it could be used as little consequence or okay or good, decent.
Ah,
as
interesting.
Well.
I just remember Phil Rizzuto always going, "Oh, what a Huckleberry!" when someone did something.
Something kind of I remember that too, actually.
And Doc Holliday, of course, right? I'm your Huckleberry.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, yeah. So now, did Doc Holliday mean it as little consequence or I'm just right?
We'll have to ask Val Kilmer. I don't really have any idea.
I loved Doc Holliday when I was a kid. I thought it was so romantic.
You did. I forgot that. You really
did.
I
loved Gunfight at the OK Corral, and Doc Holliday just seemed the ultimate in
cool. Do you remember there was a period where he started coughing a little bit?
Yeah, I like that idea. I know.
I remember that.
Okay, now we're going to go to something really interesting with all this crayon. Is the crayon in cranberry taking out itself as a cranberry morpheme? Because we now have crayon apple, crayon grape, crayon strawberry, crayon orange, etc. And crayon now has like an independent meaning. It now kind of means cranberry, just as crayon.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a really good point. Okay, I vote crayon is not a cranberry morpheme, but the other things were. Is that allowed?
Wow.
It's getting kind of like metaphysical, man.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armia, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.